And we're back, the Durin Show.
Yep.
I had a witty open, but I just blanked on what it was. So there's that.
So Mitchell, how are the witty doing? Open is people are really confused because our last episode was a 30-minute episode promising Marcus and Matt at Articon, and it was going to be a multiple day event. They were at Thursday. You know, they were actually there for the Wednesday.
Yeah, it was Thursday night.
It was Wednesday night. Yeah, and then they did Thursday, they did Friday, they did Saturday, they did Sunday. And with each passing day, they said, Mitchell, I do not want to talk about this. I do not want to talk about my game. Mitchell, I do not want to talk about the game. So we basically scrapped it. So we're moving on.
we'll definitely do a quick recap. But Mitchell blew Matt and I up. I think it was like Thursday or Friday. It was one of those days where Matt and I went 0-3 on the day for doubles. And Mitchell's like, let's talk about it. And I was like, go away. We need to go purge this from the memory bank. But no, we definitely need to do a recap. And speaking of recaps, we, in true fashion, true to form, we've skipped through several events, and now we're post Nova 2023. And so we're going to do a recap of Nova, but it's a little bit different. Because rather than talk about our epic failures and successes, we have Brian Anderson on to talk about his experience at Nova, because Brian represented the West Coast and got third. Should have gotten first. It was very close to being first.
I don't know about should have, but it was very close.
You were this close. No, he was battling on top tables for what? You were in first place for three games?
Two games, I can't remember. Game four was technically on table two. So the whole second day, the last two games, I was table one. Yeah.
Ah, okay, yeah. So living that rough life up on the top tables with all the real players while Mitchell and I and Matt looked on longingly, and we're just Brian's fanboys for the weekend.
Watching Baylor.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yep, just definitely pumping him up, cheering him up from the middle tables. You got this, Brian.
Yeah.
We're definitely gonna do a recap of all of our games in normal fashion, life and work and all the things. When you travel to Articon and Nova back to back, schedules get a little bit hairy. So Matt's not able to join us tonight, but he'll be back soon. And yes, when he shares his recap, it's gonna be hilarious. So I'm gonna steal one of his stories because I think it was early on in the tournament, Matt was playing next to a table where, no joke, the Belrog spent the whole game running away from two bears. And Matt was just like, what is going on?
Is this what my life has come to? I'm watching a Belrog run from bears?
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Sometimes they're scary. If there's two, you didn't tell me there was two bears. I thought it was just one. I mean, two bears is pretty scary.
It's a Belrog. You're scary too.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
No, it was a fun weekend.
This is an actual question. If you had two bears charging the Belrog, could both bears do the bear hug power attack?
Yes.
I don't see why not two monsters could do different brutal power attacks in the same combat, right?
Yeah, because the only brutal power attack I think that says specifically ends the combat immediately is Barge and Hurl.
Barge and Hurl.
Okay, so in that case, if you think about it, if the Belrog clubs one dual roll or loses a strike off, it's actually pretty realistic that he could die in one.
There's no, you mean just let someone else get to fight 10? Because there's no strike off.
Well, no, because the bears could strike up to 10.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Belrog is the master of flipping the dual roll, right? Like, I mean, there's no might. You only get four dice. And if you don't have a goblin in combat, there's no banner, right?
Yeah. That's a good point.
That's true. All right, but rabbit holes.
All right, but enough about the bottom tables. Yep. Back to the top tables.
There's a subliminal jab at Matt. He's not here to defend himself. All right, so Brian, this was your first time at Nova, right?
This is, also my first time flying to any type of Lord of the Rings event. So no LVOs, no Adepticons, no Novas. I've only been a car traveling player my career, so this was the first big show I went to.
Way to show
you jumped
up
into the deep end.
Although Clash last year is also a pretty big show, but this was the first one I had to fly for, so yeah, first Nova.
Oh, that's dope.
That's awesome. You've been crushing it down over here on the West Coast for a while and doing really well, and Marcus and I have been getting on you saying that you need to start traveling to events and Yeah, you definitely showed up and represented the West Coast, which is awesome.
Yeah, I would have gone last year, but I was getting married, so.
Yeah.
This is my first
time. Bad choice. I'm just kidding. Nova first. Marriage second. Just kidding.
All right, Brian, tell us what, let's do a quick just overall recap. Tell us what army you brought, just a quick rundown of the composition, and then I want to jump into our pre-tournament. We did doubles. You and I actually played doubles together and
yeah.
mopped up.
We mopped, but
I want to talk quickly about our strategy walkthrough for the scenarios and then just jump right into game one.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to start. So I brought Angmar, and the context behind that is I love the army. I am obsessed with Angmar. I think it's a, you know, everybody's got like that army that's their baby, you know, like the one that's just always ready to go. It was my first like fully painted army. I've been playing for a long time, but I've never really like, I would say I didn't start really playing at a competitive level until 2015, maybe 2014. And competitive with quotation marks, right? I wouldn't say it wasn't really until you know, kind of the latter half of Portland that I kind of got introduced to the, you know, that next level of competitive. Anyways, so Angmar was
first. And we say that with a huge grain of salt, because how competitive can you be playing with toy soldiers? But anyways.
I think we're going to get into it, right? We're going to answer that question if you continue listening to this podcast. Stay tuned.
That is true.
Next, on the Dern Show.
Ryan almost got kicked out of the event for punching somebody, but I don't want to spoil too many things.
So Angmar has always been my favorite, and not to go into too much info, but through the summer, and I think everybody hits everybody a little differently. I did get a little disenfranchised with the game for a bit with the hobby, but I booked these tickets to come here, and I was like, what do I bring? I gotta bring what I know. I got to bring what I know inside and out. That's not going to surprise me. I don't need to forget a rule that I'm playing. Although I did, I think, forget like one rule. Spoiler alert. I paid for a spear on my banner that I played with out the entire tournament.
No.
Playing one point down. That's why.
I was playing one point down the entire tournament. Yeah.
That explains third place.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, so I wanted to bring something that I knew inside and out. I played it by far the most. It's not my best winning percentage army, but it's the one that I felt the most confident that I could just pick up, start playing. And I know Gulivar, who I'll get into, is a big part of the army, recently took an FAQ nerf in the sense of flying monsters, right? Being able to get shot at. So I knew taking him, I think people maybe weren't expecting it. Maybe people weren't expecting Angmar. But we'll talk about the format of the tournament of Nova and it being veto, and how that kind of also helped play into that decision. But that's what I took. I took pure 650 points of Angmar. It was the Witch King on horse with a crown, the crown of Angmar, not the crown of Morgul, because I'm a convenient purist.
we talked about that too.
Yeah, let me know when you want to dive into that story. But I don't, preview, I don't believe in taking the Witch King on Fel Beast in an Angmar army, because I'm a convenient purist. And, but you got to take a crown.
Not around an Angmar.
You got to take a crown. The crown is the best war gear in Lord of the Rings, in my opinion. So you have to take it. Marcus will disagree.
We're gonna go on the tangent now. Because it was, I think it was Friday night, we were prepping for the GT and we were talking about that. And it was all three of us, the brothers plus Brian. And Brian was telling Matt the no fell beast Angmar because, you know, it doesn't agree with the lore. And Matt, his first retort was, but the crown of Morgul that Sauron gave him? Brian's like, well, I'm a convenient purist.
I think it might have been until that gave me that, but I can't remember. But, you know, look, he was the king of Angmar, okay? He probably had a special crown. So we can all just role play that it's the crown of Angmar. Okay. That's what he used to equip. Right. So he was three might, 14 will, 3 fate. Anytime the Witch King is your leader, it's got to have the 3 fate. I think it's mandatory. You got to have the three might, because why not? It's three might. And I've gotten really good with my play style, where I feel 14 will is more than enough to do what I need to do in a 2-hour game. Especially since he's on horse, he doesn't need to be a combat hero for me. And I've got a big giant demon of the ancient world. So that's my Witch King. He had like 11 regular orcs, an orc with a banner, various shield and spear combos. Then I had Gulivar. Gulivar had 4 orcs with bow, 3 orcs with shield, 3 orcs with spear, just to have a little terror line. And then the bows were to go run around and grab objectives or shoot horses. He had a specter. And then I had 2 Angmar orc riders with just throwing spear. And some people would ask, hey, why don't they have shields? Because I'm lazy. And I didn't model them.
no, the way the points worked. You're a convenient purist.
Well, you know, that's just how they came out of the box. And, you know, Marcus has a really great argument that even in Angmar, even the spear should have shields, because they'll probably have terror, and orcs with shields can just hold lines with when they have shields, right? Like with terror, they can just...
Yeah.
And we'll go into that in one of the games where a handful of them, you know, less than maybe 8 less can hold entire battle lines behind, with a terror. So, and then finally I had the Bear White, good old Barry White, with 4 orcs with shield, 4 orcs with spear. So that summed up to be 36 total models, which I thought was pretty healthy at 650. Like I knew I wasn't not going to be breaking often unless I was going up against maybe like pure Iron Hills or something that or Garden of the Fountain Court spam that could reliably charge me. And all 3 spirit heroes. So that was my army composition.
I think you're missing one of the most important pieces to your list too.
So the Dead March.
At least one Spectre.
Yeah, you got to have one. I wanted to, but the way the numbers worked out is I really wanted to be a like mid 30s points value. So that's just kind of how it cooked out.
Yeah, because what's the quote unquote standard for 650? That's 32.5, I think. 32, 33 models. So yeah. You were 3 models over the quote unquote average. Yeah. So yeah, that's a healthy army size.
yeah, for you know, an army that could get shot off the table by AOL, right? Which is kind of what I was thinking I would play a lot of. But as maybe we'll get into, we realized AOL wasn't really that big of a presence there.
Mm-hmm.
No, only a couple. Only there was a couple 2 AOLs.
They were both floating at the top tables, but yeah. I did play
Dragon Emperors.
Yeah.
There was some Dragon Emperors, but I think one of the things that surprised me the most is how many Pits of Dol Guldur legendary legions there were. I think there's at least 6 or 7.
I think so. The way that I heard was that there was 5 Pits of Dol Guldur, and then there was 2 Azog Hunter Orc or Bull Hunter Orc lists adjacent to it, but only 5 Pits of Dol Guldur legendary
legions. Okay.
We can go look at the list, but that's what someone told me I might have been talking to Devin about it, but yeah.
There was also a ton of Gondor, too. That was the other thing that was surprising to me, how many Gondor lists there were, or fiefdoms, Gondor / fiefdoms. There was at least, it seemed like 10.
At least 10. Yeah, maybe 11.
Yeah.
Quite a bit.
Yeah. All right, so just going into the tournament format, it was 6 games, right, Brian?
6 games for the GT, yep.
6 games for the GT, 650 points. And the biggest thing about it, obviously we're going pool by pool, but it was veto system. So the way they had you do it is your opponent and you rolled off. You each veto one scenario and you play the one remaining in the pool. All right. So going into the tournament, I know I look back on the weekend and I remember we both had just finished doubles. Did you guys want to talk about doubles, or did you want to just go right into his GT games?
Maybe we could just mention that me and Marcus also brought Angmar for doubles. And ironically, it was almost the same army list plus a Barrow White, because it was 700 points combined.
So you just added a Barrow White.
It was very similar. Yeah.
I think we had a couple more Spectres.
I think we had 2 total Spectres, but the model count, pretty much most of the army was very, very, very similar. So.
And you guys
and do you know, I was going to say, and we were very smart about the fact that we were bringing identical armies and both brought the same army to DC.
Yeah, I could have brought, I could have just used my army that was in my bag, and I made Marcus travel with his Boulevard. It was terrible. I'm a terrible.
None of us realized it until we showed up. We're like, yeah, that was real smart. But anyways.
Yeah. But we went 3-0. We ended up finishing fourth. But that felt pretty good to just like roll some dice and watch how these models interacted. And see how these players reacted to Angmar. I don't know, maybe we'll go into that later, but I think how the Pacific Northwest sees Angmar as an army maybe is a little different than what they see. I don't know, but I think that could be an interesting discussion point later on. But I kind of got to see how people reacted to it. You know, the typical Angmar tricks where people kind of getting used to them or you know. So it was really good for me to just roll some dice and watch Marcus play Gulivar. Is you know, always inspiring to see how he uses that model. And it was a great way for me to just kind of get the feet wet, see how the army played on the tables. And 3-0 was pretty fun. Doubles is always fun. Every game is always a fun match.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was a blast. Fun. Doubles is so much fun. The scenarios are great. You get to shake off the rust. You get to get all your bad mistakes out of the way. But you bring up a really great point because it's so funny. We all talk about our local metas, right? Local metas. Well, I would say unequivocally, without a doubt, our local meta is Terror. And it's because most of the core players play Angmar. I mean, you, Brian, play Angmar. Marcus plays Angmar. Another player, Nick, plays Angmar. There's so much Angmar. And then on top of that, there's so much Terror that the local meta is always automatically got to bring some sort of Fearless, some sort of auto-pass curse. So whether that's Thedrid's Guard with an all-bodyguard army, or it's an all-royal guard army, or it's some sort of Fury in your list, like there's always there's always some sort of Fearless in our list. And it's so funny because you brought this to somewhere else where the meta is not always Terror. And it was hilarious to see people not expecting it, to be honest. I don't know.
Yeah, I would argue there's not just Angmar here too. There's also just quite a lot of bit of Aura of Dismay. There's quite a bit of half troll spam, especially by the Canadians. You know, Wormwomox here. There's always we've got one player that always brings Great Beast of Gorgoroth to every event. There's just always going to be some players that bring us. Oh, and Black Numenorean spam is
Black Numenorean spam is huge.
We have so many Mordor players, and even when I play Umbar, I bring a decent smattering of Black Num. So, yeah, Terror is pretty big up here. Not that it's
The last thing I'll say about doubles before we get into the GT is doubles are quickly becoming my favorite part of every tournament because the scenarios are super fun. It's great to play with somebody else. Just the team dynamic is really fun. And I love playing doubles to see what the boards look like because we're playing on the exact all the same boards. And so you can kind of get a feel for, is there a ton of terrain? Is there not a lot of terrain? It's enjoyable. So
get
your dice warmed up and your brain warmed up.
You guys play like sports, like, you know, how like sometimes you just want to kind of go out and walk the field a bit or like just walk around the basketball court, before a game, you know, just like absorb your scenario, your setting. So that way it doesn't it's not like something totally new to you when you go and it's like, oh, hey, we're starting in 2 minutes. Kind of getting used to the setting. So I think it's a big advantage, honestly, for psychological.
Yes, absolutely. Reasons. Absolutely. And it helps that it's just so much fun.
Yes, every game, basically everybody starts out fighting each other almost within the first turn or two. It's great.
Yeah, combats is just straight in. One, charge!
No shooting turtles. Everybody's just there to roll dice.
Okay, let's get into the GT. There were 84 players? 81 players?
87.
Players, somewhere in 87. There. 87 players. Maybe a couple dropped last day. So a really good turnout. What was pool one? Pool one was the objective scenarios, right? Domination, capture, control, and breakthrough were the three options. So, Brian, walk us through which scenario you ended up picking and who were you playing against?
Yeah, and I just want to say I do feel guilty that it's just me talking about my scenarios, but I'm sure I can't wait to listen to go into all yours in the future.
Oh, we're coming.
Huh?
Heck yeah. No,
our recap is to come. Don't worry. They've heard us talk.
Well, you promised now. You have to do it.
So. Dang it.
It's on the record.
So my first opponent, forgive me, I'm not going to remember all my opponent's names, but I'll just say up front, I feel one of the biggest things was all six of my opponents here at this GT were just incredibly a joy to play with, which I candidly was not expecting going into this, you know, traveling, going to the East Coast, hearing about a very hyper-competitive, it's basically the US Open, right? So I was expecting, you know, rules lawyery stuff, and there was disagreements, and there was call TO calls, but every single one of my opponents was a pleasure to play with, all handshakes around afterwards. So my first episode, I apologize if I don't remember everybody's name, but I just want to get it out there that I enjoyed playing with everybody that I played with. So
golf clap for everybody. Golf
yeah. Clap. And hopefully that's not just a bias because I was crushing it. But yeah, I'm sure everybody talked a lot of smack about me because it was Angmar after. So I don't know. Usually you don't get the best experience when you play Angmar sometimes. But okay, so let's talk about it. So I'm playing against a Survivors of Lake Town Erebor Reclaimed Alliance. So this was 40 plus models of a Lake Town Captain, Bard, and Thorin on Goat. I think, oh, and the kids were, oh, and Percy. So not a Captain, Percy, I'm sorry. Although there was also a Captain. So it was a good, healthy chunk of survivors, and it was only a smattering of dwarves plus Thorin on Goat. So healthy numbers, and I knew that... based on some of the terrain, so it's capture and control domination. What's the third one?
Breakthrough.
I don't know which one I vetoed, candidly, but we ended up playing domination. I feel like I probably vetoed capture and control, and I was fine with breakthrough, and I was fine with I was kind of like on domination, but. Oh, I knew why I picked why I beat capture control is because domination. I knew I could front load all the objectives into one side. I didn't care where I started. I knew where I was going to end. I'm an Angmar player. I just move everything forward. So I think that's why I did.
And capture and control, especially with Angmar, capture and control has the unfortunate ability where they can tag it and run away. And so having a terror bubble when people are taking stand fast, it's not as good. So yeah, domination is good for you.
Yeah. And we can spend probably the least. Sorry.
Oh, no, you're fine. I was going to agree that domination is good because you can overload one half, like you were saying.
Yeah.
Capture and control, not so much because it's evenly split. But even breakthrough, you can overload on the side that costs more, or is more effective for your points. So, like, I understand that logic for you.
Yeah, I knew I was going to get an Angmar bubble somewhere, and I was going to try and park my butt on as many objectives as possible. And that's kind of what I did. It was a Ruins of Dol Guldur board. So there was actually a pretty sizable ruins right in the middle on the center on the central objective, as well as some woodland terrain in the back half. He got to pick the board edge where actually created some pretty unfortunate choke points for me, but I knew I had to get through anyway, and I didn't have a flying monster. So, and in a way, choke points actually work really well for Angmar, but the dwarves were consistently charging, but. I did that exact strategy where I front-loaded one end, and I went to kind of get my models right on the front line, put Gulivar in a strong spot to start, but also not to where he could get overwhelmed right on the front line, have some nice control zone protectors, Witch King centralized, and then Barrowite on the right flank, but all still within 6 inches of the Witch King, and just kind of pressed forward. This won't be a very long battle report because... it kind of went downhill really quick for my opponent, unfortunately. It was, I wouldn't call it, I guess it was kind of a tactical misplay. On the first turn, I go in and compel a dwarf forward and get Gulivar into him, as well as some dudes to wrap around and block Gulivar from being countercharged. But with enough space and an orc just kind of as a bait just south of him. So... just kind of leaving a little orc hanging that was outside of a terror, but with like pretty close, or it might've even been within terror, but like a juicy bait. It's like, hey, come get this. And then I also put one on the north of the compel enough to where I could potentially scare with a heroic combat and maybe burn some might off of a bard, off of the kids, or like worry about the kids or make him play a little bit more defensive with Gulivar. Just see what happens. Just basically read what the defense would give me. And I don't know if he saw it, but right on the first turn, he charged one of those, that bait orc on the north end and called a heroic combat. With Thorin for free, right? And he thought he was safe. He thought Gulivar was boxed in. he goes in and he slams like 3 inches, 2 inches away from Gulivar, like one orc away from the Witch King, probably thinking he's in a good spot to maybe delete the Witch King. And I just called a barge with Gulivar. We easily won the fight. Barge to push this guy back, and then I'm sitting 1 inch away from Thorin. Went right into him, one shot at him. Without Ooh, even no. having to cast a transfix or paralyze.
And no might or
a point of might.
Yeah. Yeah, big misplay.
Big misplay. And it was kind of a shock. He was a great opponent to play with. He still fought on the objectives real hard. But from there, it was basically just Gulivar taking the top right objective. Just cleaning out, you know, the bowmen and all the little Lake Town guys. There were the dwarves kind of kept consistently charging the middle, but never enough to really do anything. There was only like six or seven of them. The Witch King would take out one or two a turn. I was happy to spend my will killing dwarves because I knew those were the most reliable charges to try and stop Gulivar from flying around the table. I sent orcs to go capture the edges. I sent some orcs underneath the Dol Ruins to capture the center. And ultimately walked away 10-0. I can't remember the exact way I got to 10. I think one was contested, but I'm pretty sure I got a break. I held most of the objectives and not a single wound or loss on any of my heroes.
Nice.
10 would be 4 objectives, 1 contested, and killing the leader.
Oh, that's right. I think Gulivar did slam into Bard at the end, so that makes sense. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, unfortunately, it was just one of those things where, you know, when you can delete a Thorin on turn one, things kind of snowball pretty quickly. So,
oh, yeah, that's awesome, because that's his killing power.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I think I lost maybe like 7 orcs.
Well done. Well done. Excellent start.
Strong first. Yeah. Strong start. 10-0. And so you're jumping straight up to the top 10 tables.
Gosh,
with the big finish.
Yeah, where did I end up going? I think like table 7 or something. It was the one with the weird fur.
Oh, that Rohan board.
The Rohan?
So it was a beautiful Rohan board, but the instead of a battle mat, it was essentially like a kind of a loose rug. Like carpet. And so,
yeah, rug. So if you had like, rug. You know, if you had like the old Easterling metal models where the pike's standing up, those things were just, and that's what I want. But yeah. That's what I ended up playing, and we just kind of had like a gentleman's agreement of like, we know where the base is, right? Because it was just falling over. Like, nothing could lie flat for some of those models. So,
yeah, horrible. Pool 5, the maneuvering, I believe.
Maelstrom is the game 3. Sorry.
Yep. So, maneuvering. So, you have the choices between storm the camp, reconnoiter, and divide and conquer.
Yeah, and I think it's important to pause here to talk about my favorite concept, and maybe what we did Friday night as well, if you want, because I think it's probably going to be the most fun part of the pot, at least for me, is to talk about the Barry White honeypot trap maneuver.
You've named it.
I have named it. Yeah, it was brilliant. I gave full credit to Mitchell and the Durin Show for devising it and its brilliance, without which I don't think I would have won this game and put me on the path to getting into the top table. So do you guys want to go talk about what we did Friday real quick, or do we want to go right into this game?
I love it because it was also my favorite part of the weekend. So every night, you know, we would go back to the hotel, we'd have some drinks, and it was you, Marcus, Matt, and I all just sitting around a coffee table, enjoying a couple of drinks and theorizing and crafting, like, okay, what if you see this? What if you have these vetoes? What are you anticipating? What are you scared of? What are you trying to avoid? And it was just back and forth the whole night. We'd all rotate around with between all of our lists and like thoughts and strategies.
Yeah, it's got to be a best practice moving forward. It was so beneficial because even if it's like just hearing someone else come to the same conclusion with you, reinforces your confidence so much to where when you do make that call on the table, there's no shadow or doubt in your mind. You're like, oh no, this is my plan, I'm gonna execute it. Because if you do have that shadow of a doubt, like, you know, that lingers and there's like, oh, and you're beating yourself up. You're not thinking about what's happening in real time, right? You're beating yourself up. So I love that. That was incredible. Huge.
It was fun. Walk us through what the strategy was, Brian or Mitchell.
I think Mitchell's gotta talk about it because it was his idea. So
Oh, it was just, it was fun. I had many ideas. Marcus also had many ideas. I'm sure a lot of them came into play. But one of the ones that we were doing is, okay, what about, because we were going pool by pool. Which scenario do you veto? Which ones are you okay with playing? Which one will you probably end up playing? And I think when we came to the conclusion of pool five, this one specifically, he knew right off the bat that he was probably not going to play recon. Right. Yeah. You were gonna veto recon. Yeah. No march. And you did not want to play defense. You were not comfortable about getting models off. It was just a, I'm definitely vetoing recon. And then I was thinking in his, the other mind is the guy's probably not going to play storm the camp because a lot of people don't want to play for draws, especially in a Angmar army that divide and conquer purposely, it purposely splits Angmar in half. So I'm like, you're probably going to be playing divide and conquer. So then we started playing the strategies of, okay, what do you do for Angmar? And it, I, this is the only reason why I said it. You and Marcus both play Angmar a lot. And I don't know if it's just the rhythm or the what you guys were used to, but you both said, okay, you put the Witch King with the Barrow White and you put Golivar off by himself, and Golivar can kind of fly and catch up with everybody else. And
that, I also didn't have my wargs there. So it was like my mobility warband. Yes. But that, yeah.
And you're like, well, they'll just have to play catch up and they'll just meet in the middle. And I, being someone who plays Angmar quite a lot, I kind of knew what the trap would be. And I was like, well, what if you put the Witch King and Golivar together in one corner and you put the Barrow White, because you said the Barrow White only had like six orcs.
Eight. Yeah, four and four. Eight orcs. So, smallest warband by far.
So it's a Barrow White and eight orcs. And I said, what if you put that in the other corner? And that was the whole idea of where this came from.
Yeah, because setting a trap. Like, would they go for the bait? Would they siphon their resources to go delete this army, knowing there's a clock, and then use the bulk of my army to position and try and control the center? Because in this scenario, the center is what, worth 5 points. Each of the two sides are worth two, and then I think there's breaking leader, right?
Yep.
Seven and five. Yeah, break three, leader two, and then two, two, five. So yeah.
So the whole idea was, what if you put the bear white in the corner? And because it's so tempting, especially since you're not a mobile army, the other army's probably going to be mobile. And they're like, oh, I can quickly delete this, be up on the points, and then come back and meet the rest of his army. And it's so tempting. But anybody who's done that before knows it always takes longer than you think. It always takes a couple more turns. The Barrow White's able to tuck himself into a corner more than you think. And before you know it, you've committed too much time, too much of your army. Meanwhile, the rest of your army has taken and fortified the middle. So that was the idea. So take it away, Brian.
Yeah. So you guys heard a little preview of the board. It's a Rohan board. There's like smattering of Rohan buildings throughout. The center is open, but there's plenty of like choke points leading to it. Ideal for Angmar if I could get there before my opponent. But guess what I'm playing? I'm playing the host of the Dragon Emperor. Who has a drum, who has a lot of cataphracts. I want to say at least four. Got an emperor, and so I was like, cool. But critically, and this goes back to our early topic, no Rutabi. No Brorgir, the shaman, or the priest. I'm sorry. And if you played in the West Coast, you're not bringing Host of the Dragon Emperor without Brogir. I'm sorry. I'll tell you, and we'll preview Kylie's. She had Brogir with Rutabi and the Dragon Emperor, who ultimately won the event. But yeah, so I was like, okay, so no Fearless Easterlings. That's a plus. But they're just going to drum to the center, squat on there with the Emperor. You could probably even just dismount and just dominate the VPs that way, right? Once the Emperor just, we had a similar army model count to start the game. I think he might have been 34 models, and I was like 36. But I knew once he dismounted, I was like, I'm out modeled here, right? I'm out fought, out bannered. It's just gonna, if he were to take the center, there's just no way orcs are gonna grind through these models. And Golivar can grind, but like Rutabi can be in there being annoying. Even the Dragon Knight can be annoying if it's not taken care of. And then, of course, the Emperor can just go right into Golivar and call Heroic Defense for three turns and then just win the game, right? So with the resistance magic, all the will and everything. So anyway, so I do the plan. I do the thing. I was like, you know what? I'm going to trust these guys. I'm going to put Barry White off in the corner on his own. I'm going to put the bulk of my army in another. And first turn, he drums. Critically, he does not put the drum with the Dragon Emperor. He puts it with the dragon, with the Rutabi Warband. And he drums two turns in a row. Barry White's just marching slowly, 6 inches at a time, in his little corner. So he's within charging range, or at least his orcs are, after the second turn of the Dragon Knight Rutabi Warband. And they're like staring at the center, just from different angles, right? If you know the scenario, yeah. You're all in kitty corners, you're all in the four corners. So at this point, charging distance for the Dragon Knight and a few Cataphracts on some of the orcs that do cause terror. But he's drummed there twice. And then the Emperor's like kind of hugging this house, moving up from his corner. He had some difficult terrain. I think there was like a woodland or something right in front of his corner. So he had to take a little bit of a longer way. So he's slower. And he's basically parallel to this Rohan longhouse at this point. Maybe like 4 or 5 inches from the center line, 4 or 5 inches from the rightmost objective marker. And the Barrow White kind of gets up. I think I win priority. I get up and I cast Paralyze on the Dragon Knight. And then I kind of like retreat. But so now the Barrow White is so just in range of the Rutabi Dragon Knight Warband, because I had to move up to get in cast range and then like retreat slightly. And I've just got the four orcs around it. It's like kind of hugging a building. So only a couple Dragon Knights are going to have even line of sight on the orcs, but it's like, they're like right next to each other. They're like on top of each other, but I positioned it really well to where like they couldn't get obliterated if everybody passed their territory. Only a couple were going to get in. And he goes in. He goes in with Rutabi, and he goes in with one Cataphract. And I think only Rutabi got the charge. Everybody else failed on the terror. But he takes an orc on that turn, and he's already kind of like committed. So he moved that warband. Meanwhile, Gulabar and the Witch King are just marching towards the center. And they're about to be in their next turn. They will be in casting range for the Witch King on everything in the center, including the Dragon Knight, which was going to be something I would love to just compel forward. It's got no will, and then just combat off of it or just kill it with Gulabar. Critically, I think it failed its courage check as well. So it just got stuck, stranded in the middle. I think there was just one Cataphract and Rutabi that got in. And then, so what he does after that, he did all finish those moves. I just had to be there, and I tried to like block all my, you know, my crooked evil smile, my Angmar smile. He about faces the Emperor. He was halfway through that house, right? Like marching towards the center objective. He turns it around and starts going around to come to the aid of Rutabi and to pin the Barrow White Warband in a vice. And I'm just like, I had to like look away to like hide my expression while he was doing it, because I didn't want to give away the trap. And I was like, oh my God, he's doing it. It's really working. It only moved 6 inches, and he had to use at least 5 of it just to go back, double back, essentially. He's the butt of the palanquin is essentially covered in the back end of this Rohan house, and the choke point that he would have to come up through, I don't even think that base could fit in. It was a good choke point to get to the center objective. So I knew right then and there I was going to win the game. I knew that I could just squat Gulabar or just squat orcs in that control zone. And if he tried to go the other way back again, it was not going to be enough turns. He was only maybe going to get the right objective, but I had the center, because the force of my army was going to be, all of it was going to be there next turn on the center objective in great choke points.
Nice.
And I'll speed the game up, but essentially how it went down was, he kept going in, the Bear White's warband starts to collapse slightly, but I keep backing away. Moving towards the left center objective and into another choke point. I compel easily the Dragon Knight, one-shot it, just start slinging Transfix on Rutabi. I don't even bother with the Emperor because it's behind enemy lines. It's not getting to anything. Just going to let it be. By the end of the game, somehow Barry White and three orcs survived against both of his warbands. It was, or three warbands, both forces. Just with terror checks and shielding, and blocking off control zones so that the Bear White never got charged, and just slowly backing up towards the middle line, take that objective. The Witch King also comes to help and like just kind of bounces, makes the Emperor bounce off. So the Emperor eventually, he dismounted to try and go in for a combat to just fling in to get some VPs, doesn't get there. I've easily got the rightmost objective because he just completely abandoned it. I just put orc bows on it. And then the center is completely under control with me. But he had a very clever maneuver to where I did not get more VPs. I won this game 7-0. I should have gotten more. He was very and I did mess this up where I did not just go for the barge because I'd already broken him, I think. I can't remember. Or no, I was just the objectives. I didn't break him. Maybe I was going for the break, but I didn't barge off of Rutabi with Gulivar at the end of the game, and he was able to just back her away. He survived, or she survived, and contested the center objective with one model, surrounded by all of my army, not even close to breaking. So, I think, yeah, I didn't have a charge bonus, so there was no knockdown, and I just didn't kill her because she had three wounds and a one fate. I can't remember, two fate.
Oh, that, okay. This makes sense. So you didn't you struck her instead of barging her, because if you barge, you pick where she backs away, and you could have backed her opposite of the
If I just barged, I could have sent her in a different off key objective. But she just backed away just within range, and I was like, I think I was going for break. I think that's what I was thinking. So yeah.
Well, it's still a really good showing. And the number one reason in my mind why you always take Brogir, everybody thinks I'm crazy, is like you take Emperor and second choice is Brogir, not just for Tremor, but freaking Terror. Yeah. I mean, you need to have the Fury.
Yeah. And you know the trick, and this will come in big in game four, is like if you're going up against an Angmar, you know they're going to sap Will anyway. But that's resources spent doing that, right? Because it's five Will. And you don't even have to cast it. You can just save your will or whatever until the turn you need it, because then you don't care if you get sap will the following turn, right? You just need it to charge, right? So that's the turn you need it. Yeah, and yeah, you got to take Brogir. It's always number two in my opinion.
Well, that's awesome, a strong job. Start. So 9-0 or no 10-0
and 10-0 and 7-0. Yeah.
So VP differential strong.
Yeah.
Going into game three,
but not but critically not maxing out. So
not maxing out. But still haven't given up a VP over two games. We're going to be tracking this as well.
Yeah, and Candleland, I think that was in a game and a matchup that I don't think I had business winning, personally. So.
And also, Gulivar, the Witch King, and the Barrowite still have yet to take a wound, correct?
Gulivar, no, I think at this point, yeah, no wound.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, game three. Now, this one was the Maelstrom. So we had the choice between Command the Battlefield, Hold Ground, and Heirlooms of Ages Past. So I know when we were talking about this, we had a bunch of strategies. Brian, what do you remember from these strategies?
Yeah, gosh. Actually, do I have it even written down here? What did I know I wanted to do? I knew I wanted to veto. This is Maelstrom, right? So I knew I wanted to veto Heirlooms. And the reason why was I can't compel someone to drop the heirloom. That was a big one. I was playing Harad and Mordor on, I believe this was kind of an Osgiliath board. But I always wanted to veto heirlooms because Hold Ground, I feel like that would be great. If I could get to, I could drop a big and steal fear bomb. I knew I could grind out a Mordor Harad army to potentially break on the center objective, lower defense, and with Gulivar. I just felt like that was probably my preferred one. And then can't remember the other one. Did you guys recall anything else? What am I missing? Why did I hard veto heirlooms? There was a bigger reason.
Because heirlooms has the two randomizations. Not only can you not compel the relic down, but you have to survive the bad deployment rolls if you roll bad with a low might army. Plus, if they get a lucky roll early on six, they're going to turtle, and you have no march, so they could easily hide from you for over half the game.
Yeah,
because the other two scenarios give you a chance, right? You an equal opportunity to try to get it. But Heirlooms is just a wild card with a two-hour time limit. You could get a bad couple of turns, and it costs you the game. So you just wanted to throw out the wild card. I don't want to even chance them rolling a six-turn one and turtling. I'm just going to go for the other two. That makes sense.
And a third really big reason, and probably the one that was That's a great point. I probably didn't even think of that. The one that was most prominent in my mind was that his banner was Suladam. My banner was just an orc. And he had a Witch King on Fel Beast. So I knew that with the banner points in this in heirlooms, his was way more survivable, and he could just do some shenanigans where he could take mine out, Earl, Barge, you know, Black Dart, shoot it with evil shooting to get rid of the spear that was touching it, stuff like that.
Makes sense. Right, which one did you end up playing?
So we played Hold Ground. Nice. I vetoed heirlooms, and then, yeah, he vetoed the other one. So played Hold Ground. Ban the Battlefield. Yep. Which probably would have been a good one for him. Now that I think about it, because he had the march and he had more mobility, but
well, so what was his composition? You said Witch King on Felbeast,
yeah, so a pool of warbands, full 18 each. Witch King on Felbeast with like 17 will because he just had more points to spend because he maxed out both warbands. And he had Black Nums up front and he had Moran and Orcs with Spears and Shield behind that. So this person was prepared, and this opponent was a very strong opponent. I think one of you guys maybe told me he was kind of like top dog in Ottawa, maybe, but very strong, very skilled. Love the army composition. We both all agreed it's a very strong army composition, well prepared for any scenario. And then Suladan full warband. I think there was at least three or four Serpent Riders, three cheeky Watchers of Karna, which I love to go charge charge the terrifying model. Have that, you know, not just Black Gnomes. He had the other army, the other warband was covered to make critical charges. And also just two attacks is good too, right? But like that little army composition trick to just have something ready to charge a Bayorn, charge a Gwaihir, charge a Gulivar, reliably, right? With, you know, going up to courage 5 on the charge. So, and then just a bunch of, you know, basic Harad with spear and bows. So I think like 8-9 bows, 9 bows because it was 50%. So yeah. Yeah. So didn't love to see that because it also meant my orcs weren't going to charge the Black Numenoreans if he got to the center first. So. But it is what it is.
Well, how did so with Hold Ground, there's always the most painful priority roll off to see who has to do the Maelstrom rolls first.
And he, won priority. So, my opponent won priority, which is, of course, losing priority in Maelstrom. And he rolled, and this is going to be a fun game to talk about, guys. This is so much fun. I love it. I think personally, and my opponent was fantastic, because of the skill of my opponent, but also some of the how I was able to rally. I think it was probably my favorite competitive game I've ever played. So hats off to my opponent. It was, I think, the most skill-intensive game of the night for me. And that's not diminishing anything I saw at the top tables. Because obviously I had to play Evan Iverson, spoiler alert, who is an incredibly skilled opponent. But in terms of the raw like input and out like strategy that went into every single model move in this game to grind out the victory, was physically, I think I like walked over to you guys. I think I almost collapsed on you. Just like, hold me. because I just left it all out there. So let's talk about it. He rolls first and he decides to drop Suladan first and he gets it off in a corner on a 5. A corner that has a pretty decent looking straight shot. Not a lot of terrain. Again, this is an Archaeolius board, looking straight at the center objective, which is a piece of terrain, which is about like 50% of a building. So on one side, it's got like 2 walls, right? And then open to look into it. So he's got a pretty good look if Suladan can just march straight towards it, right? Ideally, he'd probably want to put his Black Numbs on it, but good look, right? Good drop. And he rolls his next warband, the Witch King on Felbeast. Rolls a 1. Decides to elect No Might, which I think is the right play, because if he has to come on with No Might, then it's just Suladan's Might playing against Gulivar, Barrowite, Witch King. You know, you need heroic moves. You need all that stuff to deal with Angmar, right? So he holds it back and he's like, well, poop. Go ahead.
It's not such a bad thing for a 1, because Suladan probably was protected when he came out. He probably came in a very fortified position. So now he makes you roll all your warbands and then see.
Yeah, it actually wasn't that fortified. The north left side of it was completely wide open. Like if I came on from the outside, because I think if you might everything up, it's a 4. Which is north-south, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I never remember.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
Which would allow, which would still leave the flank open.
Okay.
Based on if I remember correctly. So even if he mighted everything up, there could still be a turn where I just blitz in with my full army on Sylladan. So
got it.
So I think it was the right call. And then okay, so then that's my turn. So I actually drop Gulivar first. I roll 5, I think, and I get him right in a great spot to just annoy and harass this warband. Not from necessarily from the flank, but from a really good position where I'm like, oh, I'm going to hurl into Sylladan. I'm going to just eat the horses and just make sure this Gulivar has got enough tools here to make sure this warband is never going to touch the center objective. And it's also got my Spectre. Yeah, it's got the tools to make sure this doesn't happen. So I put that there. But no Witch King, no Bear White. Then I roll for the Bear White. I think I rolled like a 2 or something. He puts it all the way on the far opposite corner. All the way. It's kind of like the Bear White honey trap again, just all by itself, off in the in the corner. And then I'm like, hey, time to roll for the Witch King. I roll a 1. And I was like, and we're just having a blast. We're like laughing, we're joking. I was like, man, isn't that funny? Isn't this a weird game? He's like, yeah, this is so weird. Our Witch Kings don't want to come play. I'll speed through it a bit. The warband gets into stuff. Gulivar survives the shoot. He takes a shot. He takes a wound off the Harad shooting, but he gets in. He eats, and I think I even just combat right behind to get a hurl, and I get a hurl off and dehorse Sylladan and like one other horse, I think. Ooh, nice. Did what I want to do. Make sure this thing isn't marching anywhere, because they can't march without Sylladan coming right behind him, right? So. I think there's only like 1 or 2 Serpent Guard still on their horses at this point. He actually is doing a really good job of just eating orcs though. Those watchers are charging. Especially with Gulivar now behind enemy lines.
No terror bubble.
Again, super tactical, right? And Barry White just decided, he's marching up. End of his move phase. Sorry. It's time to roll for the Witch King again. He rolls a 1. Actually, no, I'm sorry. This is my fault. I spoiled it. I actually moved first. So Barry White marches up, and then I roll for my Witch King. I roll a 1. So that's 2 ones in a row, and we're just hooting and hollering at this point. He's dogging me, and I'm like, hey, be careful. You never know. Karma. I decide not to might up because I want that might, especially in this game. And I wasn't going to get into the spot where I wanted him to be anyway with the 4 in the same conditions. So... And then he rolls, and then he also rolls a 1. At this point, we're just dying laughing. We're having so much fun. The fact that our Witch Kings rolled 2 ones in a row each into this critical, game 3. I think we're on like table 5 at this point or something because we both had major victories. We're just like, what is this game?
I was playing next to you on this round, and there was definitely a lot of laughter coming from your table.
Oh, yeah. We were having a blast. Yeah, we're just hooting and hollering. And then we'll just kind of speed through it. So eventually the next turn, everybody's on. His Witch King comes on. My Witch King comes on. Most of it's all tucked into this corner, though. And Barry White's just marching towards the center, 6 inches, a turn. I think this might be the only mistake he made all game, is he didn't march 9+ models towards the center. He sent like 6 Black Numenoreans and like 6 Morannans. Or center, maybe thinking that the Witch King was going to always come on the Fell Beast and like drop and instill fear or something, or do something to sweep up the orcs. But he didn't send more than the Bear White's warband when he could. He had full 18 models, and he wanted to go help out against Gulivar and the Witch King. And I thought that could come back to you because the center objective is everything, right? Breaking and taking the center. And Bear White's just sitting right on the center. He didn't even bother going to join help. And he's like, nope, I'm going to be right here in case I break, stand fast, hold the center. I'm already in position at that point. I'm like tucked in. The Bear White's like perfectly positioned behind terrain so the Witch King could never charge him, based on like where it could land. And I just have orcs just bodying him within 6 inches. I'm like, cool, that's just going to sit there all game if he wants to come. And I'll speed through it, but essentially we're just getting into a muck. It's tactical. It's every single position, every single control zone. It's intense. It starts getting a little sweaty. The laughter died down. We're just going into it, and I'm grinding out kills. I'm grinding out charges. to the point where I actually, I don't think I break him, but he's very close to breaking me. In fact, he's not even close to breaking. He's very close. On the last turn, he needs one model to break me. I'm one away. The Witch King's like spent all its resources. I'm out of might. Gulivar's got one might left. And I get into a position where he fails a lot of charges, and I actually get to compel the Witch King. I compel the Witch King forward.
Ooh.
And then I get two charges off with two orcs and two spear supports onto the Witch King. And he's shocked because he had just failed a bunch of courage checks on Gulivar. Gulivar attacks a guy within combat range, lying right behind the Witch King. I can't remember the specifics how it worked out, but the Witch King is also near. My Witch King is nearby. This is all on his Witch King. And it came up to where you have to peel off ice one-on-one, which he wasn't expecting. So the Witch King got to peel off, I think, a Black Numenorean that came to help to try and peel Gulivar. Because Gulivar does get his combat. Well, I can't remember the exact specifics.
Let's talk about this just a little bit, because this came up a couple times for the weekend. When you have multi-combats, right, you have to pair off fights at the end of the move phase, and the person with priority gets to choose how fights are paired off. And he had priority. But there's the last sentence of that paragraph where it says you have to pair off fights via one-on-one where possible. And nobody, everybody stopped reading that paragraph before they get to that sentence. And so it was quite surprising. So Brian, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think what you said is he charged a bunch of people into the Gulivar area trying to tag Gulivar so he could pick his fights and pair his fights optimally, right?
Yeah, well, no, I think it's because he had priority. So I'm actually pretty sure I had to come in with Gulivar tagging a model and wrapping into the Witch King. I can't remember.
Oh, that's what it was. Yes, you tagged and wrapped into the Witch King.
Yeah, and then so what that would have been is that Gulivar would have had to fight this Black Numenorean one-on-one, right? Because I had the other two orcs on the Witch King. But then my Witch King comes and tags this Black Numenorean. So I think in his mind, going into the final battle, his Witch King, I think, was out of might anyway. He couldn't have struck at that point. He thought, oh, my Black Numenorean is going to just take Gulivar and the Witch King off. Because now I'm out of might too, right? Because I just spent my last point of might on this row of combat. But it was just the Witch King on the Black Numenorean one-on-one, and they had to fight one-on-one, which meant Gulivar is going to be in the Witch King, his Witch King's combat, and my two orcs. So I think that was a bit of a shock. I don't know, and correct me if I'm wrong, if he wants to reach out to me. I believe that's how it went down. It might have actually even been less consequential, but I know there was a surprise.
I think the big thing to note there is it's a multi-combat. So for trying to paint an image for people, what you just said is his Witch King is in combat. It's touching base to base with your orcs and Gulivar. He also has a Black Numenorean charging Gulivar, which you countercharge with your Witch King. So in his mind, because he has priority, he's going to make the Black Numenorean fight the Witch King and Gulivar.
Right.
Which Gulivar is touching the Black Numenorean and his Witch King. Mm-hmm. And he's going to fight his orcs versus your Witch King. But you have to fight a one-on-one. So you can't have the Black Numenorean fight both the Witch King and Gulivar, because the potential for a one-on-one there with just the Witch King. So therefore, Gulivar and the orcs have to fight his Witch King. So that's where the confusion came up, because he's like, well, I have priority. I get to choose. Well, you have to fight one-on-ones where possible. And for those, because I did have to drop this on Devin. I was one that brought this up to Devin. Is it's doubles. In the move phase.
Doubles.
Yeah, this came this came out. I was playing the Iversons the day before in doubles. And so I had to point it out. It's actually in the move phase. That's why everybody misses it, because they're always looking at the combat phase for pairing off fights. But it's in the move phase.
Yeah, and the Witch King chart was on this Numenorean in the movement phase, because Gulivar came in heroic combat.
Yep.
So exactly. The Numenorean was already fighting one on one with the Witch King.
Yep. And so that's where, if people want to reference this, it's in the move phase. It's unequivocal. Devin said, yeah, I can't argue against this. It's very clear and dry. Must fight one-on-ones where possible.
Needless to say, Gulivar and the four orcs mercilessly destroy the Witch King, giving me two VPs. He did have enough guys in the center so that I didn't outnumber him. But again, he didn't send equal to or more He sent like six, and they just kind of got in there and they just stood there. They didn't charge because they weren't going to, you know, make their jurors checks probably. The bear white didn't even, I think he was like full will. I think I just paralyzed a guy just to paralyze the guy to do something on the last turn. But I had more in the middle, so I got 3 points there, and I killed his leader for 5-0. And it was a pretty shocking outcome, because I actually didn't talk about this, but at one point in the game, I made a critical misplay where I activated the Witch King behind enemy lines, I think in a heroic move. And I didn't have a space for him to go. And I had to forfeit the rest of his movement. I got a spell off. I think I like transfixed Suladan or something. Huge misplay, because he got stuck behind and he wasn't going to ever make it to the middle. But yeah, so overcoming that felt really cool. He missed breaking me by one. My beautiful orcs just somehow held on, won some fights, and he did not break me. Killed 18 models, but not 19. So yeah.
Yeah, this was, I was sweating. This was an interesting one to play next to you, because yeah, you guys were laughing. There was a lot of animation, and then the middle part of the game, it became a little bit more, I guess, quote unquote, normal, like casual conversation. In the last 30 minutes, it was like you could hear a pin drop. Both players, I think both of you were feeling the pressure.
Oh yeah, no, it was an incredible game, incredible opponent. I think that was the most cerebral game that I had to play that weekend, to somehow grind out that victory. That was at that point, I was starting to feel like, hey, maybe there's something going on here, because I had just gotten 3 majors with no VPs awarded. I came in with almost no expectations to this tournament. I was, again, kind of just out of the game for a little bit. I was taking an army that I was just like having fun with. And, you know, I was like, oh, I was expecting to see certain armies that would just crush it. But at this point, after that match, I was starting to feel, okay, maybe we got something going here today. Because those were 2 games back to back that I feel like I should have lost and I didn't. And I came out on the other end, and I was kind of like looking at the tables, reading where people were at. And I'm like, I think I've got something building here. With 3 games left. So halfway through the tournament, I was feeling good.
Yeah, nice. This was game 3 of 4 on Saturday, because on Saturday we played 4 games. Saturday was a long day.
Yeah. And, you know, let me know if I'm going to too much detail here on these, if I'm eating too much time.
No,
this is good. Okay, so going into round 4. I don't even remember what the pool was on round 4. Oh, it was the unique one, right?
It was the unique, yeah, the Assassination Fog of War and,
The one that shall not be named.
Yeah, Clash by Moonlight.
Clash by Moonlight.
Yeah. Ailment by Moonlight is copyrighted by the Shakespeare Estate. Can't use that anymore.
Okay, who was your opponent for game 4?
Again, I forgive me because I don't remember names or of everyone that I played, but this person's army was one of the most immaculately painted armies I've ever seen. It just happened to be the one army I didn't want to see, but I knew if I was going to be three major wins, I knew I was going to see it eventually. An assault on Lothlorien. Yeah, it was a huge old horde at 650 models. Can't remember how many he had. But it was a big one. And it was Muzgur, it was Druzag, it was an orc captain and an orc shaman. And he told me this was interesting because he had been, and this is actually important. His army was incredibly painted. We're talking, you know, golden demon tier paint job.
He was like winning in painting awards, wasn't he? Because I swear I saw a couple of pictures of that army submitted.
Between games, he was just painting?
No. Like, he submitted the whole army. I'll have to go look. I'll have to go back and see if I can find the picture that was posted. Because it was, I swear it was his AOL.
Yeah, it was incredible. So, and that's actually part of the story, is that, so he's been spending, he told me, I think he spent like the better part of the last 6 months painting this army. Maybe less than that, but a big chunk of time and investment. And this FAQ just recently hit where he had to change, you know, a huge part of his composition to where it had to be now orcs and goblins. So I don't know if that affected maybe his list building a little bit, but I think we can all agree that we would probably have taken an orc shaman versus an orc captain, right?
Yeah.
I thought you said he had an orc shaman.
No, an orc captain.
So no orc shaman, an orc captain.
Other than Muzgur, of course, but no.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Missing that fury.
Yeah, maybe he wanted the march, probably, I guess. But I feel like with AOL, you know, you've got the spiders, you've got the bats, and you've got the shooting to where I don't think you need it.
I know for a lot of people, it's hard to pay 50 points when you don't see a lot of terror, and it's a transfix on a 5+. Yes, in that Legion, you get to reroll. Yeah. You get to reroll. Yeah.
East Coast does not play terror, man. So I guess, yeah.
This was, again, backing up to my suspicions. I'm like, there's something amiss in the crick here, in the Potomac, that I was like, okay. I mean, it's not like he didn't have fury. He just didn't have it on his orcs. Cause Muzgir does not have it. Again, this was just like one of the most beautiful looking. I have no shortage of compliments for how incredible, like just the individual. Oh, it was kind of like, he told me the inspiration was bone armor, but if you've seen Rings of Power, it kind of had like that cool, like off white bone aesthetic that the orcs had.
Nice.
This was on the goblins and on the orcs. It was gorgeous. It was incredible to look at. Like the level of detail was so high. So I have no shortage of compliments. So you just have to tell me to stop. So he puts it down and we're going to play Fog of War because I vetoed Clash by Moonlight. I don't even remember why. Oh, I figured Fog of War was going to be my best chance with flying monsters, misdirection compels, and all my shenanigans and my ability to assassinate. I shouldn't say my best chance. Assassination would be my best chance, but I knew he was going to get rid of that. And which he did. He got to choose first. He immediately got rid of assassination, and I was like, "Cool, let's play Fog of War." And I feel like Mitchell, you're about to jump in.
No. I was just adjusting, but yes, that sounds like a solid choice to me.
Yeah. I mean, and this is what Ingmar loves. They love Fog of War assassination. That's like, oh, cool. I know I'm gonna guaranteed get my kill. Assassination more so than others, but like I'm gonna get it because Gulivar gets to be my assassin. They know Gulivar's my assassin. There's not a lot you can do except for shooting him. Play AOL. Now, critically, I know I might have said that earlier about his army composition being slightly wonky, right? Or maybe not wonky is the right term, but maybe not
optimized.
Maybe not fully optimized, maybe. I don't know. How do you want to say it? Yeah. But this is playing on a very, very filled terrain board of Askelia Thrones. This is not the same one that I played on earlier, but this is like bigger ruins.
Is this the one we played on doubles?
I believe so. No, this was up on table two at this point.
Okay, so there was probably 15 or 17 Askelia buildings on a 4x4. Like it was packed.
There was at least 12 on this one because we counted out what was available to choose for, because a bunch were in the middle, so they're ineligible for selections. But it was heavy terrain. It was tons of choke points, buildings. Like, and I was like, okay, I can kind of work with this. And there's this big thing kind of off to the middle, not true middle of the board, but like just left of it, with tons of door, like three main doorways on one side and one doorway on the front. And it's just this big hulking thing that's bigger than Gulivar. Like, sweet. He can't deploy everything in one corner. He's going to have to deploy on a line because it's 12-inch deployment. I can hide most of my army from at least half the shooting. And that's exactly what I do. He starts dropping more bands. I finish off mine. We begin the game. I selected a terrain piece that was as close to the center and to the side as possible. Like, to the basically hugging the edge of the board to, again, avoid a lot of shooting and use the terrain to my advantage. I selected my target was going to be his goblin shaman. I did that because I thought, well, his captain's just going to go off and march to his objective. And he knows that the captain is the obvious choice, because it's like, oh, it'll have to want to be in combat, right? His orc captain. I figured his goblin shaman's always going to be around the bulk of his army because he's going to want his, you know, his fury and his support And I can't choose Musgur, and Drew's or Musgur's the leader with heroic defense, and Drew Zag's gonna be super protected. He's got two like wounds and fate. So I figured the Goblin
Shaman's like always way in the back.
And he's always gonna be in the back. And I mean the Shaman's always gonna be in the back too, but I figured it was gonna be the easiest to like black dart twice kind of thing.
I think the also thing you gotta be careful about Drew Zag is he's got that stupid fury for all the beasts, which is the thing you're scared of. So like a bat swarm automatically passing courage test to counter charge. That sucks. So,
Yeah,
staying clear of him. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. So, he picks his objectives. He made the right play, I think. It was a very weird game. We'll go into it a little bit. I think he played an incredibly smart game, but also at the same time, I think made some big mistakes. Because, again, he had a huge advantage over me, right from models on the table, right? Just looking at matchup and his ability to outmaneuver me. He had four Orc Warg Riders with shields and spears. I had two. He had a captain. He had way more models. And he had all the tools, I think, to destroy me. And he played a very cerebral game. You know, we're on table two. This is, you know, you don't get there just by playing a list, I think. But there was some key mistakes. And one of them... happened pretty early where I faint my wargs to go run the other way, you know, just like to go pressure off an objective. And he sends his wargs to go fight them off thinking he's got the advantage, which he does. His captain abandoning them, staying with the main force to be like a might battery. And I move everything up, just kind of like hugging this center thing. I put a bunch of orcs, the Barrowite and a Witch King kind of like in this main terrain piece in the middle, just holding doorways with terror. Just going to let his guys bounce off me. He's not coming in while I go take out his bow line up in the far north left corner. He's got a lot of prowlers over there. He's got a lot of orc bows. Gulivar's just got to go in. And I think I posted this gif. It's like the Wonder Woman in like World War One gif where she's like walking through the bullets and everything. I'm like, Gulivar, I don't know how this is going to go, but you've only got one way to go and it's 12 inches forward. And he goes in and he doesn't take a wound on the first round of shooting. He did have to move really? 3 inches, I think, how I moved and how he had to move. He had to hit on sixes on the first turn. Oh, okay. So he doesn't take a wound. And then on the next turn, I'm able to get a cheeky through one of the doorways. And this is also important. He doesn't cast Fury yet on any of his models. His Musgur or his Druzag and the Goblin Shaman. And I think he does that because he's anticipating what I would do is I would just sap will right after he does it. So he's saving it for the turn that he needs it. Additionally, probably on Drew Zag, saving it for the enraged beast because he knows that I can, if he just cast it and goes down to four will, I can sap his will and then he's down to one. Then right. He only gets like one shot kind of thing. You know, I think it's the right play. Plus, all the scary bits get to do their thing, just use his courage no matter what, if they're within 12 inches of him anyway. So that he doesn't even need Fury to charge or to at least, you know, avoid fell lights. But one of his bat swarms fails the first fell lights test. And I get to fly at 12 inches right into my little secret base. Gulivar gets to charge it. And a bunch of orcs just to seal the fate. He shoots into the combat. And the only thing he takes off is a wound on the bat swarm. And then I was like, all right, this is cool. Good. And then I combat off that just to get Gulivar like basically in point blank range for the next turn. And slightly hiding behind a pillar. So I do have a piece of terrain blocking Gulivar, at least partially, for the next round of shooting, because that's what he's gonna do. And I feel like I'm in a great spot. I feel like I'm squatting in this position. Got orcs in the choke points. I've got the bulk of my army and Gulivar where I want to be on my objective. I'm like, okay. Like, maybe I'll squeak out a 6-6 kind of thing. I'm protecting my Barrowite, which I feel pretty confident is never going to die. Because it's, like, using the terrain to not get shot at. But also, like, hiding behind, like, just three rows of orcs in these choke points. So, I feel pretty good. He's probably going to get his objective easily. If he's smart, he's probably going to target Gulivar. Because Gulivar is going to have to do a lot of work and try and flash kill him. He did. Very smart opponent, I think. Somehow, and I'll just kind of speed it up, but I'm at this point, I'm just kind of grinding out some kills. I'm doing my thing in this corner, but somehow in this corner, you know how I talked about those wargs? I sent two of them. I don't even have shields. These are naked warg riders with throwing spears against four loincloths with shield and throwing spears, way better painted. You know, they've got the drip, they've got the Lambo, they got the Bugatti,
they got the swag.
I've got the 1993 Ford Taurus warg, and and they pull it out. They take out, they kill two with throwing spears. At one point, it came down to, by the end of the game, I'll just wrap this up. I had one warg rider left on warg, and he had a warg and one warg rider left on a warg. So we're just like, they're just in like an aerial dog fight, literally, pun intended. And I'm winning somehow with Tom Cruise and F-14s, and they've got the, you know, they've got the Jets and Spiders, you know, but I've, you know, I've got Maverick, I guess.
Awesome.
That's awesome. With the inferior technology. But, you know.
Hey, it just goes to show, when you roll sixes, good things happen.
I just hit on my throwing spears, just taking people, and you know, with the plus one to wound, because these are orcs, right? Like I'm wounding on fours on the wargs, so he gets thrown off.
Oh yeah, I forgot about.
So I'm just aiming at his wargs every time, and I'm taking him out while, you know, he's aiming at I think I'm winning a lot of priorities. I think, and he has no might over there, so yeah. Tom Cruise in the F-14, just nice. Doing it over there. That's what one of those guys are named, by the way, now. And
we gotta correct this though. Isn't it the F-16?
Is it the 16?
Sure, Maverick. Yeah, F-16? I think maybe it was both, but I think it was predominantly. I think he flew the F-14s out maybe after they crashed. But the majority of the film was F-16.
Okay. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, we're talking. Well, we're on the same page though. We're the ugly ass, like just like the base painted. What is it? The brown, and then just like two layers of highlights, and like I think I painted some teeth, and that was about it. And versus like these just absolutely drop dead gorgeous models, and then they're just doing it. So I end up holding them off. And the last turn, I'm able to just grab enough. My base is just big enough. And we're kind of fighting on this terrain piece on my side of the board where I can get my model in to tag both his warg and his other guy. So it tags that, and that ends up preventing him from getting his objective. It was never none of my objectives never important. It was never over there. It was always going to be where the bulk of my army was, because that's how Ingmar plays. And plus wargs, you know, orcs run away. And I prevent him from getting his objective. And I was like shocked, because he actually did a really great feint on another piece where he got like three goblins on it, which I thought was the more obvious choice, but it wasn't. It wasn't what he was doing. So he played a good feint, and I just got lucky, I guess, with my Tom Cruise orcs and Rooster. So I take my objective. The last two turns of the game, I just start. I'm like, yeah, there's no point in hiding anymore. I'm just gonna start throwing black darts at a shaman. He failed his fate. He's dead. Got my target. Got my objective. Protected my Barrow White. Gulivar does take some wounds, by the way. He got shot through the pillar. He took his first wound, but he recovers. Then he tries to make a play. At the end of the game to kill him. He gets a spider and a bat swarm. Eventually on Gulivar, but critically, I had like 1 point left of will at my Barrow White. I've just been throwing like one die stuff at Druzag just to try and get him to resist or like burn resources. And I got him down to, I think, one will on his Druzag, and then got a paralyze off. So either you resist it, you don't get to cast Enraged Beast anymore, or you take the paralyze. So he resisted it and didn't get to cast his Enraged Beast. But he did get a spider and a bat swarm on Gulivar, and he won that fight. But he did not kill Gulivar. So he did a wound. And I can't remember how the math worked out. I think he was protecting Druzag, which makes sense. That
makes sense.
But I think he got 4 points and I got 9.
Because he protected his hero and he wounded his target.
And he protected his hero. So I made a victory against my worst matchup possible. And at this point,
nice.
I'm the only one with four major victories now, because Kylie and Evan were playing right next to me on table one, and they drew on Fog of War. I think it was like 6-6 or something. So which one it tends to do in Fog of War. So at this point, at the end of the first day, I'm the top dog with freaking Ingmar playing against people who...
And you only gave up 4 victory points the whole day.
That was the only time I gave up 4 victory points, yeah. So, or my only victory points given up so far. So, I move into first place at the end of the first day, and it feels pretty good.
Nice.
And the cool part was, we were using an app which was showing all of our pairings and all of our games, West Coast pairings, and they posted matchups for the next day. So you knew who you were going to be playing the next round, or I guess the first round of Sunday. And so that gave us so much material, clearly, because...
Because we go back to the war room, where we're throwing back,
we go back to the cocktails
from the night before. Yeah, and you guys did great, I think, you know, because you at this point, I think, I don't know where you guys are at, but you're, you know, kind of moving your way to, like, the top middle tables. But you guys, for some reason, really rallied around me. I love the support to try and help me and give me some tips and counters. It was great, so.
It was super fun. Yeah, but we did the, Saturday night, too, we did the same thing as Friday night. We all went around the table. Obviously, Brian was playing the best of all of us, so we focused a lot on yours. But and we all went around.
What I was doing.
Looking at matchups, what tables we were going to play on. We had seen all the tables a little bit. We knew, for the most part, kind of what it might look like. So it was super fun.
Yeah, and I knew who I was playing. Condor, Charles Braille, Ben Gallagher.
You knew who you were playing, but we didn't know the scenario pool. We knew it was one of two, but we didn't know the scenario pool.
Yeah, but I knew I was playing Pits of Dol Guldur. So with only two pools left, it was kind of easy to work out what I did and didn't want to do. If we were going to play Maneuvering, I would love Retrieval, and we determined that I would hate Destroy the Supplies. And what was the other one? We ended up playing the Achilles stuff to the Death, Lords of Battle, and Contest. Those were the two pools left.
Yep.
So we go in, find out we're playing doing Killy stuff against good old Pits of Dol Guldur. And this was the first time my opponent brought a Warhorn. My opponent was so enjoyable. I got to go check out his podcast now, Gondor Calls for Ale. I was just shocked at this point because this is game five. This is on table one. And we're just having a jolly time. Like, just a jolly time.
I was gonna say I played both Ben and Sam multiple times. They're always fun to play. You're in for a good time no matter what, and they're there to have a fun time, roll some dice, and enjoy some Lord of the Rings.
You know, we're pre-measuring stuff. We're like, hey, we're obviously doing intent, like, hey, this is where I'm gonna be, this is gonna be charge range stuff, you're good with that, you know, because at these kind of conventions, people are going by you. Things can get bumped, especially on some of the terrain boards. Everything, you know, it's just a jolly time. We're having a good time. So I immediately beat Terra Constant Champions because it's Azog. It's Azog, and he has Surprise. And
free combats.
Free hero combats, Surprise, resistant to magic, 6 might, 4 will. He can get so far ahead of me on turn one that it would be difficult to come back from. So that was an easy choice. He obviously vetoes to the Death. I think, I'm not sure if that was favorable or not, but he does it. I think maybe he had a banner, I had a banner, but maybe he thought I would protect my banner more easily than his. I think that was
Lords of Battle with Azog, free hero combats. I'm thinking he's going to get ahead on the kill count pretty favorable, fast. Right?
Which, unfortunately, I think sounds great when you first think about it, but then you think about what you're playing. You're playing against Angmar. You're not going to charge anything with Hunter Orcs, even with the Warhorn. The only person that's going to do anything in that list versus me is Azog. And we came up with a strategy, or at least I floated it to you guys, was, I'm just going to start hurling some drained courages. He's going to deploy 24 inches. I'm going to deploy back in a choke point, and I'm just going to start draining that courage. And because Azog is going to be the only person killing things today. It's not going to be the Hunter Orc captains. It's not going to be the Hunter Orcs. And that was the game plan. I got into a decent choke point. I actually kind of missed a better choke point that I had to kind of reposition to. But based on where I deployed, took some shots. He got in, could barely charge anything. I was killing like 300 or 400 Orcs a turn, just getting he won almost every priority, but that was great for me. Because I could just watch him where he failed and then just go pile in and go get 4-on-1s, 5-on-1s on the Orcs that he did get in. It's funny. I get a drain courage on the first turn on a 2, and I'm like, oh, I'll re-roll that with the crown because I'm just doing single dice and I roll a 1. But after that, I think I get one more drain courage off, and I'm just taking resources off with the Barrow White and Witch King every turn, slowly whittling them down. I'll run it quick just because we're getting up on time, but essentially he only got one successful hero combat off the whole game. Just well, good.
Did you end up doing the channeled drain courage? Because I know right before the game.
I did do a channel at the end of the game, but not a channel drain courage.
Got it, okay.
Yeah. I was in a position. The major play of this game, there was two major plays of this game. I'll just kind of run through it. Was one where he was retreating his Warhorn into a tree in the back. And then his line was kind of moving into the choke point. I was kind of playing mid back line. So like maybe 6 to 8 inches off my back line and just holding a choke point, just grinding out Hunter Orcs. And Gulivar gets a combat off an orc and flies to the back and to the point where he couldn't counter charge me from with anyone. Even if he called surprise, and I was in range to go have Gulivar go kill the Warhorn because that was going to help my goal, right? Like just reduce the amount of charges, reduce Azog's kill ability. And this was pretty early in the game, I think maybe turn three. And then we came up to the problem where I couldn't get him to land in woodland terrain, but they're very small woodland terrain. We're talking about like maybe like 2-inch radius on these woodland terrain on these trees. And then we looked it up. Gulivar has a walking movement of 6 inches. He's not a bat.
Which is insane.
He has very long legs when you look at the model.
Like all of the eagles, hopefully I'm not misspeaking. Eagles, fell beasts, bats, everybody is fly 12, move 3.
Yeah, but not Gulivar, 6. So I'm able to just kind of walk right in and get a charge off. It was actually a very close measurement. We had a TO. It was probably the only full disagreement me and Ben had in terms of like being able to resolve things ourselves. Cause again, this was just a jolly game. We're just having fun playing Lord's Battle on top table on game 5, you know, all undefeated teams. And we're just having the best time playing a game, which is, I think, how it should be. You know, we're playing it right. We're playing competitive, but we're just having a jolly time. And, as much as you can with Ingmar and Pits of Dol Guldur, I think, but it was the only point of real contention, I think. But we were still able to play a great game afterwards. But I did get the charge off. Gulivar killed the Warhorn. I think ultimately the game ended where he dismounts on the final turn. I think he called a surprise, which I think was the right play to do it on the final turn. Get all the stuff that you want to do. Activates Azog, dismounts from the White Warg, and fails his courage.
Ooh.
Doesn't get into anything on the final turn.
Strategy works.
It's like a 1 and a 2. Couldn't use his stats to mind it up or will it with adjust it with will. So huge win for me. And then I call a channel, and because I can still call that, I can't call a heroic move, but I can call a channel during surprise. And we made a small misplay, but it was fine, where the White Warg did get to charge with might, and you can't do that when you dismount. Only the mounted or the rider can charge still. Mm. Not the mount. The mount ends its movement immediately. So I ended up just calling a heroic transfix on the warg when I should have thrown a channeled black dart on Azog to try and go for leader kill BPs because I do not get any for that. Mm-hmm. And I ended up just winning on kill count, 3-0 major win. I think it was like 19 kills to. We also had another misplay because, again, I think we were just having a jolly time. I forgot to finish Gulivar's heroic combat to kill 2 more models. It didn't matter. I wasn't going to double them, but we just forgot. I ended up getting into his banner. And we just left it there. But it was like 19 kills to 13 or something.
Mm, nice.
Well done. So
3-0 made the win.
That's such an interesting matchup overall because, yeah, the Hunter Orcs are so killy. But I think, if I remember, really looking at the rules, Hunter Orcs are base courage 2.
Yep, go down
with
to 1.
The Warhorn, they go to 3. And then Harbinger of Evil, they go back down to 2. And courage 2 Orcs, man.
Yep, and I got rid of the Warhorn, so it went down to 1 pretty, yeah. The Gundabad's are courage 3. Which is really nice. And he had and he was like 50-50. Yeah. But it makes a big difference. That 2-3 jump is pretty significant.
Mm-hmm. So well done focusing down the Warhorn. That was a great play. And good job for remembering that you can walk into terrain. Because
I didn't remember. I had to go look it up. I thought I could just get in there. I thought I had enough to get in there with 3 inches, and I had to go the longer way around. With the half movement. So, yeah.
Okay, this is, so you are now 5-0 with
five major
victories, because it's match play died, double victories, double victory points is major.
Yep.
Your victory point differential, if I'm counting correctly, is 20. So hold on, you were at 29, so 31 minus 4. 10, so you're at a differential of 27.
29 to 4, so should be 25 differential. Because I had 10, 7, 3, which is 20, and then a 9, 4. So 29 to 4.
Oh, okay.
Plus 25.
I thought you won 5-0 against...
yeah. Am I missing a game? Oh, yeah, and plus 5. Yeah, okay.
Plus 5.
Yeah, so 30 different. Yeah.
Yep, 30.
Plus 30.
Yeah, I forgot a game.
plus 30 going into the final round. And
critically, I saw Kylie and Eben had a draw. So I'm the only undefeated team. Well, I guess that's not true. They had a draw. But I'm the only one with 5 majors.
Yeah, you're the only one with 5 wins that are 5 majors. Yeah, correct. So what is, and the last pool is...
objectives or objects.
Yeah, seize the prize, destroy the supplies, and retrieval.
Yep,
that's it. Okay,
who are Evan Iverson? It's a Dogal Dor.
What? So it's almost like a back to back run it back.
Yeah, same table, same army. Evan does not have a Warhorn.
Ooh, so even lower courage, but a few more models.
Yeah.
All right, take us through the game.
Yeah, so we discussed and we wargamed this pretty hard the previous night because we didn't know what we were going to get first, and I was going to go up against Pits of Dol Guldur. So I ended up having to wargame for the two armies that I played both times. So it worked out pretty great. Our theory hammering, whatever we want to call it. And the way we worked it out, and I think I leaned this discussion a little bit, was I obviously would love to play Retrieval. But I knew that anyone against Gulabar, anyone with Gwaihir, you get rid of, you veto that. You're not playing Retrieval. So I knew I wasn't going to get to play that. So I got to essentially know going ahead of time what I wanted to choose from, and it was going to be Destroy or it was going to be Seize the Prize. Now, he has Azog, and he's got Wargs. Seize the Prize sounds terrible, right? But the way my army's built with no march, I knew Destroy the Supplies would... spread out my army and force me to compete against multiple objectives when I only have 3, in theory, terror bubbles, right? And if I was Evan, if I was the Pits of Dol Guldur player, I would just hold surprise until the final turn and then just tag everything, you know, grind it out, you know, maybe don't charge, maybe we just like bounce off each other for a little bit, maybe we dance around, but then I would just call it on the last turn, go grab my objectives, force me into spots where I can't contest, and then just go take it. Or save mine and get the one that I need to get the major win. Because you could win 2-0, and that would be a major. And then he could take the tournament, right? Because his VP differential was higher than Kylie's. So if he just got a 2-0 victory, that's his tournament. So I think that was the right play, that I vetoed Destroy the Supplies. I'm curious if you disagree.
Oh, yeah, because Hunter Orcs, we saw this play out a couple games, and we'll see a preview of this when we do our bat reports. But Hunter Orcs... against normal orcs fighting outside the terror bubble, yep, does not work well.
Yeah,
I think the other thing that plays to your favor to the other two scenarios is a cheeky final turn command you to drop the relic. Yeah. So if you have the relic for retrieval or seize a prize, if you're down at the dumps, you have that Hail Mary last turn, drop it.
Yep. Yeah, great call. Yep, that was another thing I wanted to do. So I knew Seize the Prize is not ideal, right, without March. And I knew that he would probably just pass it off to the White Warg on a dismount with a fearless model, but I knew it was my best chance to get a win, because I knew I was very confident I was going to break him, because I just broke I just broke the last Pits of Dol Guldur, and I knew if he was going to take the prize, he would move his bulk of his army up, and I was going to break him, and he would never break me. So I knew that was 3 VPs. I also thought, hey, Azog's not that hard to win with black darts and shooting, which I did have, especially evil shooting. So I was like, okay, it's probably not that hard to get a cheeky wound on Azog and take a 4-3 victory or something, right? Even if he held the prize. And then I would just have to play defense. And that was my game plan going in. And that's kind of what happened. The details of the game was very tactical, very cerebral. I got 2 throwing spears on Azog on the first turn with 6s to hit because they moved. And he was freaking out.
Ooh.
Because like that could be a wound right there, right? I only need fives, and I rolled two threes on the two wounds, and I was like, dang it.
Ah!
He tries to pull up the prize on the first turn. He rolls a one. He gets his whole army stuck in the middle. I get my army up there. It's a slog. It's a mosh pit. It's dirty. It's Burning Man. And the man that's burning is Azog in the middle with the prize that he picks up on the second one. But he's got like four orcs deep surrounding him. And then what he's going to do is he's going to surprise, get them all out. But he doesn't surprise. He saves that. And he calls a heroic move. I call a heroic move. I don't get the transfix off, but I take off a bunch of will. Also, a really important one is I sap willed him the first turn. And he failed. He just took his resist to magic, because I think that's how you play sap will, right? Math wise, you just eat it. Because like, what if they just roll a one or a two? So he just does his resistant to magic. He doesn't spend his will, because he's already dismounted, by the way. So he doesn't have the White Warg's will. And I get it off. He doesn't resist it, and I get a five. So I took all his will off on the first on the second turn or first turn. Anyways, he resists my transfix. He gets some guys out. I leave one orc, a bad misplay, outside the terror bubble, and he loads it up for a heroic combat with Azog, and he just dances off. And at that point, but a lot of his army got stuck in it with me in the mosh pit, so I'm just slaughtering them. I'm like really close to breaking them already by like turn four. I'm like, okay, that's going well. I've just got to head him off on this side, and then I bring Gulivar behind. I think I used my first Gulivar point of might to combat and get behind the line. So I'm like, okay, I've got him in this corner at this point now. Where as long as I can get some orcs off to one side, I think to the left, and then I can get Gulivar off to the north, I've got him in a corner. And if like, I can break him, and he's got the objective, that's a 3-3, right? He is an incredible tactician. He is an incredible maneuverer. Just incredible spacing, and he gets it to where Gulivar can never really land in this corner. I can only fight like 100 orc at a time going on for the next two turns. He's already got it on the White Warg. The White Warg is dancing in and out, avoiding compel and range from the Witch King, and getting Azog out of there too, avoiding Black Dart's range. He's got my Witch King kind of stuck behind his orcs, just leaving them to die. Which again, I was like, okay, I'm gonna break you. I got to get moving. Try to call some combats with the Witch King, they fail. So I just get stuck in it to where I could never really get the most of my army to pressure into his corner. But I've got some orcs on the side, and I've got Gulivar. I'll spare you the rest of the details. A big play comes up where Gulivar has 2 points.
Like by this point, I'll say like my game finished probably.
Pretty
like
much all the games are ended. And everybody's watching.
So we're all piled around watching this. We were all back. A good distance, I think. Well, most of us were back a good distance.
Yeah.
Giving you guys space, but it was a fun game. It was fun to
felt
watch.
Some breath on my neck, I'll say that. but yeah, so everybody's kind of watching this. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Kylie in a very good mood, which I knew meant probably a major victory. So, if either of us want to win this game, we need a major. Well, actually, I only need a minor, and I'll win the tournament. Because they had a draw earlier. But I know Evan needs to play for a major to win the tournament. So that helps in my mind. Okay, so at this point, this big play comes up. I call a combat, because I had just played on this board. And there's this little building that the White Warg's hiding behind that's kind of like half ruined. And it's got a window. And I can see the White Warg. Well, I can see Azog, I should say, on the White Warg. I think I could kind of see the White Warg, but through this window after this heroic combat, and I'm within charge range. We disagree whether or not I can see the model, because he's just using, since he's dismounted, he used the original model as his White Warg, as his dismount. And, I make the call, like, hey, you know, that's the model as modeled, I can see it. And I argue that I can even kind of see the White Warg a bit, but I don't get that from Devin. We call in the TO. TO takes a really good look at it, because I should also say this was an incredibly amicable game. You know, we both talked about our pre-measuring. There was, you know, if we had a disagreement on whether it was cocked eye, we rolled it off. Everything was not necessarily jolly because it's top table for the to win Nova, but an incredible sportsman, I think. We're just playing the game the right way, I think. So this is the one flashpoint. And Devin comes in and he makes a ruling that I cannot see, that Azog is invisible. Because it's he's obviously somewhere else, right, on the model, that it's just the white warg. I'm like, okay. I repositioned Gulivar because I spent a heroic combat to do that. I thought it was a gotcha. I thought that I was just going to go call my heroic move, go into a heroic move off, and I would have a 50-50 shot of potentially winning that game. Now, that's not a true statement, and after some thought about it, I think that might have been a misplay all along, because not only is it, I'd have to win the 50-50, got to charge the white warg with terror. Now, I had full will, so as long as I don't roll snake eyes, I make it. It's my last point of might, so I can't roll snake eyes. Then I've got to win the dual roll with my five dice versus, I think, three on the white warg, with three might on the white warg, which means I need to roll a six on the charge. And then I got a wound, which would be really easy. But if I did that, that's it. That's the game. He has no one around this white warg that can countercharge or come and kill Gulivar after. It was just hiding. I think saving its might to march off the board or something. And that would have been the game. But couldn't see him, so I repositioned Gulivar, and he had this great positioning to where Gulivar couldn't combat in a better spot to get closer to, like, seal it off. And essentially, that was kind of the game. I had two Hail Marys left on the last turn, where I could get Gulivar into a barge, two orcs into Azog, and get into Azog and just throw some dice at Azog. Azog preemptively called a strike with his last point of might. He ends up rolling the six, winning the dual roll. Doesn't really matter. So I don't get my leader kills. I was out of might, and he had a hyper fight, so he rolled a six.
But that's so frustrating for me as somebody who plays a Balrog with four dice. Do you know how many times I don't roll the six, especially when it's like, this is to win or lose the game?
He just three dice
here. I got the six. No big.
I rolled a five on my five dice. I'm charging into him.
Your five dice only got a five high. His three dice, of course, gets the six to save the tournament. That was the big play.
Yeah, that's how it goes. I knew it was always going to be a Hail Mary, right? Because I was just going chasing BPs, maybe get a 5-5 tie. Because at this point, his white warg is on my objective, or on my side of the board, barely, by like 2 inches. I had one last Hail Mary where he didn't see the Witch King dismounting and moving 6 inches closer to get a compel range. And I go in for a compel, and I couldn't get it off. I threw all like five will at it, got my six on the reroll, I think, or on the initial roll. For the compel to get him to take off the thingy that were the hidden objective, whatever, the relic, or the prize. And he ended up rolling a natural six. And he also had three mites. So it would have to have been a two, I think, on his resistance roll.
This is probably
two dice, one will and a resist to magic.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think this is probably one of his best plays because he was saving. You said he spent all of the resources intentionally on Azog before the dismount.
Yep.
He was always saving all of the resources on the white warg. He knew it was going to come down to a last turn compel. And so when it came, he only had two dice, one will, one resistant to magic. But he had three might backing it up. And that's why he was saving it. Because he didn't call it march. Like he was playing very intentionally for that.
Yeah, no. I think that's why that play was so smart. But I thought it was brilliant because I saw your barge into the leader. Because, if Azog... Yep. If Azog rolls, obviously you rolled a five high, but we've all been there.
Out of resources,
I know how many
to strike. So
exactly, he has no might, and how many times does a three attack hero flop? It happens all the time, especially in me this weekend. But if he did flop and Gulivar wins that fight, he easily brutally just murders Azog, and it's a 5-5 draw. It's and then just to see him roll three, and he's like, yep.
Been very close to tie breaking Kylie had I gotten that draw. I looked it up, and the first tiebreaker would have been another draw, and then it would have gone to the second tiebreaker, which is a differential, and I think she would have won by two on the second tiebreaker if I gotten that draw, which goes back to like, man, if only I didn't if I just barged in that whole divide and conquer or whatever or something, but or if I just did my black dart on whatever. And that's where I was kind of beating myself up today. I could have gotten a little closer. It was a fantastic match. It was so cerebral. It was well played. I think I surprised him, maybe. I think. I don't know. With some of the plays that I was able to make. I think I represented the West Coast well. I went into this with very low expectations. I ended up finishing third because I technically tied in terms of GPs. But Evan had a much higher VP differential. He took second, I took third, Kelly took first. Considering going in, I was kind of, I think I was joking around. I was taking my Robert Downey Jr. list before Iron Man, where it's like Ingmar was kind of getting done a little bit, I think, by the community. Because I had a lot of people walk up to me and go, oh, a Gulivard. He's going to get shot now. Like, even when we were playing like doubles and stuff, and I'm like, well, you know, you still, he can get those wounds back. But I never broke all tournament. My army never broke. Witch King, Gulivar, Bear White never died. I got five majors, and I narrowly lost 5-3 on the final game against, I think we can all say, safe to say, one of the top players in the world, right? Against Evan. I feel pretty good about myself.
So you broke him without breaking.
I broke him without breaking. That was my 3 points.
Couple models. Yep. And then he got the objective. He got the prize across the halfway point for five.
Yep.
5-3.
Yeah.
I think what a great point of how great of a weekend you had, because you were so far in the lead and you were first place and you took a minor loss in the very end. It was really fun, because usually what Nova does is, you know, it's really disappointing to make it all the way to the top table final round. Somebody loses and inevitably they drop out of podium. Well, in this case, it didn't happen to you. I think you were the first player in Nova history to lose top table final round and still podium, because that's how well you were doing over the weekend. So Devin had to give the Challenger of Champions award to somebody else who was playing on the top three tables. So well done to you. You had an amazing weekend.
Yeah. I felt pretty good about it. You know, I think the day after you guys, we talked about my game a little bit more. We talked about maybe some of the rulings, but at the end of the day, whether or not I could see that Azog, statistically speaking, I'm not a statistician. You could roll it up. It wasn't the best odds, even if I got that ruling, to get that. But it didn't go my way, and I did have to burn a point of might to do that, which did suck. But
So I will counter you, though. Not to rub salt in the wound, but if you get the 50-50 roll-off, even if Gulivar straight up dies,
I stop him from getting to my side. It's a 3-3 draw. Yeah,
a 3-3 draw. So,
yeah, but then, but even then, that only would get me second place. It wouldn't get me first, right? And I wanted to play for first. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to play for that win because
that was playing for first, though. I think
not a draw. A draw was not playing for first. I needed to get.
I mean, like that. That's if all goes wrong. Like if Gulivar flops and he dies, then it's a draw. But that's the play for the win.
That's why I made it. That's why I spent the money. I thought I had a gotcha. All things considered, I had a great time. It was fun playing. First time at Nova, first time in DC.
I think you didn't have a single practice game, right? You just like built the list cold and like went in and played. Like there was no practice game.
No practice games whatsoever with this list. Yeah. And in fact, I think a lot of you guys even made fun of me because like I didn't have a lot of shields on my orcs and stuff. But look, man, you know, when you got those F-16s, they fly pretty well. Okay? I think that's a sexy ending line, right?
Yeah, that's awesome. Well done, Brian.
Couple questions before we wrap this up, because this has been a fantastic recap of an awesome weekend. Two questions. First one, what was your favorite part of the weekend?
Oh man, it had to be your guys' hotel room bar. Each night, talking war stories, talking strategy. That's really it, right? Like that's why you spend the plane ticket money. You go to these events. It's that camaraderie afterwards. And being a part, welcome, you guys didn't have to invite me to your hotel room. I'm not a member of the Durin show. I'm not a brother. guys welcomed me into it. And, since we were all from Washington State, and, I gained so much, from those tactically and also just for fun. So that was my highlight. And then finishing third doesn't help. Getting a nice trophy. It's pretty nice. What is essentially kind of the US Open, right? And this is my first big tournament outside a local class, right? So
North America Open, really. I think it's the biggest event in North America.
I mean Clash is huge, right? And I have been to, you know, an event that scale in Vancouver, but not quite like this, I think. So couldn't be happier. And then my third thing, because I got to throw another one. all my opponents were fantastic. I didn't have, you know, we had some disagreements. We called the TO. We did it the right way. TO made his ruling. I wasn't, you know, I could have maybe been a rules lawyer, but I didn't, because that just wasn't the game we were playing. I know it was the top table. And I know it, whatever, but I think it was great. It was a great experience.
Yeah, that's a good testament. Like, no, don't put a sour taste in your mouth right at the very end, because we played the game how it was being played.
I wouldn't want to be the guy who won Nova because of a dismount, right? You know, like, that would have sucked. Right?
You would be forever remembered in history for the wrong things. So.
Right.
But hey, best. I'm probably misspeaking, but I'm going to say it anyways. Best showing at Nova for anybody from the West Coast. I don't think anybody's placed higher.
Yeah. A lot of y'all, and I know the Lynn brothers as well, have been on the top table, but I think that sounds right. I might be the only one that podiumed, right?
Yeah. Congrats.
Nice job.
Seattle Hobbits. Greater Seattle Hobbits. Let's go.
Yeah, West Coast. Northwest Hobbit League. Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, congratulations again. It was an absolute blast. It was a super fun weekend. Doubles was fun. The GT was fun. All of the stuff in between was fun. Walking around, seeing the monuments was fun. Oh, yeah. The nation's capital.
The only thing that was off was the humidity.
Yeah.
The humidity only on, like, really one day, maybe, because most of the week was kind of pleasant.
Yeah. Cool. So, all right. Thanks for having me on, guys. Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. Fantastic recap.
I look forward to the episode for your guys' recaps.
Absolutely.
Maybe soon.
Coming in 2020.
Don't make me wait a year. Don't make me wait a year.
All right. See everybody.
Have a good one.
All right. See you.